Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
So this week we are talking about the importance of play, the importance of finding those moments of lightheartedness and joy, and also maybe curiosity and using one's intellect through the form of play. This topic has come up a lot throughout my career in various different roles in organizations where leaders were more interested in finding ways in how we can get staff members to find more opportunities for play during the workday, as well as making sure that employees have the time off that they need to engage in a level of play to enhance their work-life balance or situation that they might be in. And this also has come up in my career when they have talked about it in the form of research and how important it is that we do engage in play and how play can untap our creativity and our curiosity and our potential joy in moments. And so there's a lot to this concept of play that gets lost in adulthood because it's not emphasized nearly as often as it is throughout childhood. And yet there are organizations all over the world really trying to integrate this into their workforce and then into the roles of the individuals themselves. And that's where coaching comes into play too, because in coaching, it's kind of like you can have a sandbox moment and really start to think about things a little bit more creatively and really engage in something that might be new, new ideas that haven't been thought about on your end or the coach's end, or new ways to live a life that is fulfilling for oneself. So play is everywhere in all parts of our work, which, you know, in itself is a little bit of a paradox or a contradiction. And it's really invaluable to ourselves as adults as well. So we're just coming off a spring break here, and LaShawn and I are back at it from spring break. And I just wanted to pose a question to you, LaShawn, about how your spring break and the value of play may have influenced how you're doing today.
Over spring break, my family and I went to a resort in Colorado Springs, and we had lots of time to play, mostly at a water park with my son. And I am not the type of person who enjoys or thinks, oh, you know what would be really fun? Going to a water park. It's not my idea of play or fun. However, I found that spending time with my son, who's 8 years old, and letting go of the self-consciousness of being in a bathing suit, a lot of body issues there, and letting go of, you know, what people are thinking and letting go of the worries of the day, letting go of anticipation for how the vacation was going to go, was really liberating. And it allowed me to just be present and go on slides with my son and play in the wave pool with my son and really just be present with him and experience life as a child would, and to learn from him and how he was reacting to scary situations, like going on the tube ride for the first time. He wanted mommy to go with him, so I was with him. And then to see him work up the courage to go by himself was really great too. And it allowed me to let go of those things that I was worried about that didn't get done before we left, because we had a snowstorm that gave us 2 days where we were snowed in. And I wasn't able to do some stuff that I needed to do at work. And I just remember being in the wave pool and just saying, okay, you know, you're really irritable and you're irritated and frustrated because you didn't get stuff done that you thought you were going to get done before this vacation, but you're here now. Why don't you just experience what it's like to be in the pool and feel the waves and hear your son laughing and screaming with abandon and just be. And that's one of the things that play has done for me over the spring break was relearning how to be. How about you, Erin?
I had a similar experience in that I was at this was actually kind of like a planetarium situation with my children, and we were watching a show called Accidental Astronauts on the Dome Theater. And a little bit into the show, I look over to my right, and my 5-year-old sitting there, and she just grins with this biggest grin and gives me a thumbs up. Like, she is loving this experience of being in a dome theater and watching a show that was suited toward her to age. And so that was really just like feeling that energy from her was really invigorating. But then the museum itself was a chance for us to play and lose ourselves on different instruments and different exhibits and just really get kind of lost in the experience. And one of the things that, we do when we play is we fail and fail often and fail again and again, right? Like, I pick up this instrument to play that's at the exhibit. I don't get it right the first or second or third time. And that's not the point, right? It's just to have fun with it. And then eventually, I make up a song or something. And that is also the benefit of play, in that we get to experience failure in a low stakes environment, which leads to a greater understanding of ourselves and what we're capable of too. So I find play to be very instrumental to some of the even self-development pieces and theories that come alongside coaching too. And I do feel a little bit lighter today versus prior to spring break, although a little bit tired. And I think play can be tiring, given that we had a longer extended spring break, as you mentioned, LaShawn, about the weather. So it is nice to be back into a routine. But I think this is where organizations and different workplaces struggle to find a good balance of how do we integrate play just consistently in small moments. We talk about micro moments. We've talked about those in our podcasts multiple times before, but in those micro moments throughout the day or once a day consistently, versus just thinking about play as this like one day, employee development day where you have options to do that. I mean, I think there is a lot of power in finding those moments to just engage in that level of creative play and every day, every few days, every week, that sort of thing. So, LaShawn, what do you think would be helpful during your workday as a form of play?
Well, I think one of the main things that is characteristic of play is creativity. And I think you can interweave creativity in various tasks throughout the workday, whether it's a meeting with your colleagues about a project or about something that you want to implement into your programming. For example, in my case, I work at a nonprofit, so we have various programs that we provide to our families that are in the program. So just really tapping into creativity, one's own creativity and self-expression, as well as really asking questions or designing meetings and discussions in a way that allows for self-expression and creativity, creative thinking, maybe popcorn brainstorming, and just putting ideas out there, encouraging people to think really big and not worry too much about feasibility. Just really allow yourself to have the time and space in that part of the discussion or that part of the session, just to allow various ideas to come out, whether they're feasible or not, because once you are in a creative mood and you're creative with multiple people, a lot of wonderful things come out of that, as opposed to being really rigid and, limiting yourself. So I think that's one way that we could add play into our everyday interactions in the work world. How about you, Erin? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking a little bit along the lines of how there's a lot of work being done in the virtual space and how it may be a little bit more challenging in that space to have, in a level of engagement of play amongst employees. Like, a worker or an individual maybe could on their own do something, right, that in the middle of the day that's maybe like a brain break that's playful and fun, gives them an ability to laugh, that sort of thing. But if we're working virtually and trying to interact virtually, I could see how that would decrease in some capacities, which makes me wonder, what are, larger organizations and the workplace doing to foster that level of energy among individuals? And then even thinking about that now in this tech age, in terms of just on the weeknights or on the weekends, where is that play showing up for people? I think back to a long time ago and still going on today, right? But like a lot of play centered around activities that did not include technology, such as cards and that sort of thing. And people would get together on a regular basis to laugh and have fun in those settings. And so where is that opportunity to do that? And I'm not saying that play has to always be a level of engagement with someone else or a group of people, because, even in solo video games and computer games, those can be really engaging and really helpful forms of play. And we've seen positive cognitive effects with some of those games as well. But there is this other piece of how play can increase engagement between individuals and really maybe enhance their well-being, because sharing laughter with someone can be one really healthy well-being strategy that may work quite a bit differently than if you're w laughing by yourself in a solo player game or by watching a show by yourself. So long story there to get to this point, I think that I'm finally trying to circle in on and make, is that I think play also needs to be something that is social, that can be integrated between various people, and can be something that brings laughter to one another as well. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Did anything come up for you, LaShawn, when I was talking there?
Well, yeah, I think that laughter is really important too. Like maintaining a sense of humor. Levity is something that comes to mind when you mention laughter. That those things are really important to fostering good feeling thoughts, good feeling, good feelings all around. And I think part of, one thing that came to mind when you were talking about laughing and also the importance of that being a social activity, because laughter, smiling, those things are contagious because of our mirror neurons, and that really can boost morale in the workplace as well. So I think even having in memos or things like when you're interacting with your coworkers or when you're interacting with the people that you work with or the partners that you work with, having weekly comic strips or something, that's really just funny, nothing that pokes fun at any group or anything like that, but just funny things, that like I'm thinking of The Far Side or Dilbert, where it was specific to a working environment and you kind of you can kind of like poke fun of or make fun of the situation, make light of the situation, bring levity into the situation in a benevolent way, you know, so not in a
Yes, I
malicious
like that you brought
way.
in benevolent.
I think that's something that can be lost, especially when you are in like high stakes or when there is a push to be serious, there's a push to be maybe even a little bit like assertive, or there's just certain things that I think of when I look at the working world or my experience is, you know, just to be serious. And if you bring in levity and if you bring in a little bit of a sense of humor, I had a supervisor that I worked with in Japan at the university. And whenever we had staff meetings, he would have this PowerPoint and he had this great sense of humor. And he would always integrate humor in everything we talked about. Like he would have some clever, because he was a wordsmith, he always had some clever thing to say about, well, we're doing this and then this would be, and then he makes kind of fun of it, or he, and then we would leave the staff meetings. First of all, we would enjoy the staff meetings because they were long and we had a lot to cover. And he would always just insert seamlessly this humor, and we would all be, you know, put at ease and we could laugh. That's something that comes up for me when you mentioned humor and when you mentioned like where we could laugh together. And I think just like inserting humor, not everyone is a wordsmith and not everyone, you know, has that sense of humor, but there are people in the organization or in the group that might naturally use humor to break the ice or lighten the mood. And as a leader, a person could leverage that and say, hey, you, Nancy's so funny. I think I'm going to have her bring in some humor into our staff meetings, and or just really allow her to be self-expressive. That's one of the things that came to mind when you were talking about the laughter. One thing that I wanted to kind of shift from the working world is this is something that I was thinking about in terms of play and also healing. So this is, I am shifting. I one thing that came up when you were talking about play and how and the research that's been done about play, I wonder where, and then you mentioned about coaching as well. And so I wonder where play can show up or be leveraged in the healing journey. What do you think, Erin?
I think that that goes along with a little bit about where you transitioned right before you asked that question, and that, you know, you're leveraging somebody's type of play that they maybe engage in and might be really, you know, skilled at, and then, you know, moving that into kind of a way to answer your question. Actually, Dr. Stuart Brown is a researcher and founder of the National Institute for Play. And he identified eight different play personalities that may work for different kinds of people. So I'm going to try to go through these rather quickly, with the point being that I think when we can recognize which of these personality play types may work well for us, and it can be multiple of them, it can help us better understand how we may want to use those as a healing modality. So I'm going to list these eight. The first is the collector, which means people enjoy building collections, you know, collecting cars, stamps, baseball cards, et cetera. The second one is the competitor, someone who might enjoy playing and winning games with rules and having very specific rules in those games. The third is the creator or the artist, who may find joy in making things, doodling, woodworking, creating art, decorating things. The fourth one is the director, where they may enjoy planning and directing things like hosting parties. The fifth one is the explorer, where you would be someone who maybe like to discover something new, maybe a new place, or maybe going on vacation somewhere, or even a new type of music or a new movie. Number six is the joker, where you enjoy being silly and foolish. You might enjoy telling jokes at work, like you said, or you might enjoy improv theater or things like that. Number seven is kinesthetic, where the person likes to move their body. And that might include running or skating or yoga or taking a dance class or something like that. And then number eight is the storyteller, somebody who likes to listen to or create stories. They might enjoy going to theater, to shows, that sort of thing, or writing in a journal. So I think a lot of people are a combination of these. But from a healing perspective, it's understanding which of these might be helpful. And if you are not used to engaging in any of these types of play, it could be worth trying one of these on that's the most appealing to you, and really listening to yourself about how you may want to engage in that. And of course, in a coaching appointment, that's why it's so important to have another person you can bounce ideas off of about, something that you can co-construct with a coach to find and something that might work best for you regarding how you might want to engage in play. So that's what I would say, maybe as a kind of consideration. And then the other thing is, there are always ways to adapt these play personalities, right? So, let's say you're wanting to move your body more by exercise. Is there a way to make that more playful? Maybe it's a wheelbarrow race as an adult or something like that. But just thinking about ways to bring that level of play in can be helpful too. And of course, some of these play personalities may bring up negative thoughts or reminders about bad experiences. So that's a matter of making sure that, there's a level of therapy in place if that works for you, or a way to process that through movement or even with a coach, and really trying to find a pathway through and using these then to empower you to move forward in a way that works for you. So, LaShawn, did any of those play personalities stand out to you? And do you have other feedback on play for healing?
Well, to answer your first question, while you were rattling off those different play personalities, I just had a name or a face of someone in my life. Oh, I know that person is definitely a joker. The other one is really creative. Oh, I know that one's really kinesthetic. And so it was just interesting to listen to the different play personalities and how they show up in my life and other people. And also, it gave me an appreciation of those people because sometimes your play personalities can kind of clash. And so while you were rattling off these play personalities, it was just like, oh, yeah, like I can appreciate that that's how that person brings in play into our conversations or into our interactions. And I really appreciated that just from you just rattling off and just knowing those different play personalities was really enlightening as well, because it's just a way to understand, how these things can show up in other people and also in ourselves in different situations. So I really enjoyed that. To answer your second question, I would say that those different personalities that you mentioned, like creativity, the creator, for example, I could see where journaling and visualizing yourself in a different situation or in positive intelligence, we do a lot of visualization where we visualize a time when we reacted in a way that we didn't really think was helpful for us. And we are then able to reimagine that experience in a way that we would like to respond. And so it gives us a way to recreate a difficult situation or a disappointing situation, which gives us another perspective of that situation, or a sense that we could handle that situation if it were to come up again in the future. So where I see those different personalities, or I would even say modalities in healing, definitely creating allows us to access parts of our brain that we may not access on a regular basis, which then gives us a chance to deepen or strengthen our ability to heal. So that's one thing that came out. And then also the kinesthetic as well, because one of the things that I have seen in research and also in articles that I've read about maintaining your mental wellness, movement is part of that. Movement is part of generating those good feeling hormones, endorphins and dopamine and all of those things that come with moving your body. And movement is very good for regulating your emotions and that kind of thing. So I think that that is another thing that can really help with healing. And I think movement with others too. I participated in
That's a good point.
and yeah, I participated in a exercise with a group called Turning the Wheel. And what they do is they go into schools and they work with young people, they work with all kinds of different age groups. They do this activity where they have people move and they do these like human sculptures. And when I participated in that exercise with my colleagues at work, what happened as a result of moving with my colleagues was that the awkwardness that comes with sometimes interacting with my colleagues, just different colleagues, fell away. It melted away. We were human and we were having a common experience and we were moving together and we were watching each other and we were mirroring each other. And it became this beautiful dance. It was the most powerful experience that I have had. And I would then say that it was a healing experience because it allowed me to strengthen my bonds with the people that I work with in a way that I could not have done through conversation. It was, we're having this common experience, we're moving, we're doing sculptures, we're just going with the flow here, and this is all intuitive, and we're not thinking. It was the most beautiful experience ever. So I would say that movement is definitely a healing experience, and I think should be used more.
Yeah, I like how you pinpointed the intuitive piece in there as well, and having that movement in a shared environment, going back to the social engagement of play that we talked about earlier too. And some people might wonder, well, I never was really playful. I didn't play much as a kid. Is this something that I can even embody at all? And the answer is, of course, yes. There's plenty and ample of opportunity to increase your level of play, or even just start to grapple with the concept of play for yourself in your day-to-day life. And we know, right, when young kids don't get the level of play that is required for healthy development, we might see some outcomes that might make, older, or outcomes that might make things a little bit more difficult. And so that is also obviously factored into this conversation when we think about play, and how for some it might be something they have been doing their whole lives and know how to grapple with it in a way that works for them. And for others, it's something they're just starting to try on in new levels and understand how to incorporate play a little bit more naturally into their day-to-day. So this could be a conversation that people can bring up with each other at work, in the community, with their friends. Just start asking each other questions about, what are your thoughts about play and how does it show up in your life for you? And just having those conversations can bring greater awareness and understanding for everyone to maybe find the play that they want to engage in. So play is, it's according to the Institute for Play, play is total learning. And I think one thing that I like about that phrase as well is it allows for that ability to try things on and with no pressure, with no worries of failure or those sorts of things. So it might seem like a difficult thing to try on as an adult, just know that one of the key goals of this is to recognize that failure is an option here, and it's all about you just getting the opportunity to be you.
I love what you said about failing I think that's so important because as we grow and mature and we get into the working world, it's really easy to be afraid to fail, especially if we're in a career, we're doing well, we know what we're doing, we've got a routine. Why mess with a good thing? It's easy to get into that, kind of go on autopilot. And I think play is a really fun and low stakes way to disrupt your routine. And one of the things that really came up for me, Erin, when you were talking was the micro moments that we had talked about. We had a whole episode on that. That there are ways to incorporate play if it's not something that you're used to, or maybe it's something that you're like, well, yeah, you know, when I was a child, I didn't really even play, to introduce moments of curiosity, of discovery, of trying new things. I really loved, Erin, that you rattled off those eight personalities or nine personalities, I think it was.
I think it's eight, if I remember
Eight.
correctly.
Yes, eight personalities. And how, why not just like look at that list and say, well, maybe I'll try coloring, or I'll try going for a walk, or things that we can try, like little micro moments of play that will allow us to get a sense of what modality of play works for us. We're all different. We all have different ways of approaching the world, of experiencing the world, and that's okay. I don't think that even if it's not in those eight, it could be something else. I think as long as you have feelings of joy, you feel curious, there's levity there. So as long as you're experiencing those emotions, you're in the realm of play. Erin, do you have anything to add to that?
I really like how you say when you're in the realm of those emotions, you're in the realm of play. It really clicked in my mind there that it doesn't have to be something so like play doesn't have to be the tangible piece here. It's more how are you feeling, right? Like, are you feeling joy and levity? Then you're likely in play rather than I must play to feel these things or that sort of thing. So I like how you framed that there. And I was just thinking about, how this in adult life can be such a good, consistent message to come back to, year after year, month after month, just to check in with yourself. Like even, I guess, are we at a time where we're ready for a coaching nugget of wisdom yet? Because I just thought of one.
Yeah, we're getting
Are we
close.
there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just share that. Yeah. So put it on your calendar as a reoccurring meeting invite for yourself as a reminder to have some form of play integrated in your day to day. So for some, it could be a goal of putting that reminder on their calendar once a month. Others, maybe it's once every 2 weeks or weekly or daily, or for some, even further out every few months. But just having that reminder that goes off on your phone every time saying, "How are you playing?" Could be a good way to cue yourself to engage in something that might bring you a little bit more joy, a little bit more excitement about things, a little bit more about purpose as well, and really align with your values. So you're really living out your life in a way that works for you and aligns with your values and your passions and your joy. So my coaching nugget of wisdom is that to put that reminder in your calendar to in embark on some level of play. It could be a 15-minute thing. It could be an hour. It could be a few hours. It could be, 20 minutes. That's all up to what's going to work best with your schedule. And try different things as a form of play. Let's say the first time reminder you try writing a poem and you didn't like that. So maybe the next one you go to a dance class with a group of friends. And maybe you didn't like that. You just keep trying until you get into a space where you're finding what's working for you. Okay, long-winded today, I feel like.
No, that was beautiful. That was great. No, I love that you
Well, thank
had
you.
that you included suggestions on what to do. I thought that was great.
Awesome. All right. Well, what do you have, LaShawn? What's your nugget of wisdom?
Well, my negative wisdom is, again, I want to bring up how important it is not As Erin so beautifully said it, it's not the product or the tangible, you have to play to feel this way, but it's really the feelings. And I want to encourage you to make an inventory or observe when you're feeling those feelings of levity, those feelings of joy, those feelings of abandon, glee. Those are feelings that are associated with play. Whether you are balancing your checkbook or making a meal for yourself or your family, if you're feeling those feelings of joy and abandon and thrill, you're in play. So it's not the product, it's the feeling. So I really want to reiterate and bring back that as a coaching nugget of wisdom. What are the feelings of play for you? What are the feelings? Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.